From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Illinois is nearing the halfway point of the fiscal year. The state's budget turnaround has gotten the attention of credit rating agencies. It also has helped boost the governor's national profile. But some dark clouds may be forming, and we'll talk about Illinois finances and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. And Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And our guest this week, Ben Zielinski. He is with Capital News Illinois, a reporter there. Ben, it's your first time on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Sean.
And Ben, I'll start with you. The state, as I mentioned, gotten back on solid fiscal footing in recent years. And the Pritzker administration, they've touted this as one of the major successes they've had. But now we're hearing some real concern. In fact, some of the latest news coming from the governor's budget office itself. So what is this current situation? What's the outlook right now?
Yeah, back in the beginning of November here, Governor Pritzker's budget office released their annual budget report that looks into the future for Illinois fiscally. And this year's report found that the state's going to run a $3.2 billion deficit, assuming state lawmakers make no changes to revenue or expenditure. So essentially, this is just a forecast that is kind of laying the groundwork for the governor to give his budget address, for state lawmakers to kind of dig into the budget as they start the new spring session in January. But it's a very big number compared to what lawmakers have seen in recent years. It's not unusual that this report shows a deficit coming up. Last year, it showed about a $900 million deficit. But, you know, add two more billion dollars to that this year, and that's what state lawmakers are facing. And I think that's where a lot of folks are concerned, because that's going to have to mean spending restraints and potentially new ways to find revenue to fill a hole that big.
Well, you know, it seems like we've heard a lot of good budget news from the Pritzker administration through the last couple of years. So how did it turn so quickly? How did things suddenly become so dire as to have these types of predictions?
That's a good question. And if you ask Republicans, I think their assumption is that essentially Democrats did not exercise spending restraint in the last few years. They had these big surpluses in revenue that the state brought in following the economic recovery from COVID. And basically, they just spent like crazy and created new programs and started spending all that money that was coming in from the economy. And now they're stuck here a few years later with an economy that has slowed down, revenue staying the same, and yet there's all these spending priorities that they want to continue funding. I think that's how a lot of people view the way we got to this deficit. You know, the governor has been trying to talk about cleaning up, you know, various budget holes that existed from the Rauner administration that the state has finally been able to plug in and match to a reasonable level of service in recent years. But now the key is keeping that spending up, and that's going to be a big challenge.
Charlie, do you agree that what Republicans are saying, did Democrats exercise fiscal restraint?
I believe that the Democrats did. And I think the Republicans, and my apologies if I offend them, I think they're desperate to find anything that they can complain about, because they did not do very well in their hopes to capture some Democratic seats this time around. And so they've been hammering the Democrats as tax and spend, tax and spend. And the reality is, I don't think the Pritzker administration and the Democratic budget gurus in the legislature wildly use the federal revenues to expand programs, to prop up operational costs. A lot of that money went into things like increasing our rainy day fund, paying down some debt obligations, putting money into the pension funds to try and deal with that terrible situation. So it wasn't that they created a ton of new programs. But part of the problem is that, yeah, the economy is slowing down, but the things that we spend money on are not necessarily slowing down, in the sense that healthcare, the costs are going up. The state is committed to pay at least $350 million more into the state school aid and the education, the evidence-based formula, funding formula, there's going to be another roughly $440 million needed to go into the pension funds. So you have those kinds of expenses coming at a time when basically revenues are going to be flat. And that's basically what the Gombe report said. Revenues will remain flat at roughly $53.4 billion, while spending will grow by $3.2 billion. And it's not that there's all this wasteful spending. The bulk of what the state spends its money on goes to things like debt service and pension payments and Medicaid, education, higher education. And some of that can't be cut. You can't pay your debt service. You can't decide, oh, I'm not going to pay the interest on this money we borrowed, because that would really mess up our credit rating. And you can't say that I'm going to skip pension payments, because that also would mess up your credit rating. And so there are a lot of programs. There's not that much flexibility in the budget in terms of being able to say, oh, here's this program and it doesn't really do much good, so we're going to get rid of it. And one of the things that I've noticed over the years, and this is kind of a simplistic way of looking at it, but for a lot of lawmakers, wasteful spending is a project in your district that in my project or in my district is a valuable public improvement. So you always have to take that into account also.
Well, Charlie brought up a good point there, Ben, as far as what flexibility exists. Because we can go back to the Rauner administration. Not that long ago, we saw where we had no budget in place, and yet the state still had to spend money. Courts required that. I think you wrote about 40% of state spending is required by the courts, and then you have some other things people certainly don't want to be cutting. So, yeah, there's not a lot of room for maneuvering here, is there?
No, and that's kind of part of the problem. Is sometimes people suggest, you know, oh, well, just cut the budget across the board, you know, by whatever, you know, the size of your deficit is. But the reality is 40% of state spending is mandated by the courts or by state law. And you can't really touch those areas without running into issues. You know, Brandon Johnson in Chicago just ran into this same issue, trying to make some cuts to the Chicago Police Department budget. And Attorney General Kwame Raoul said, no, you can't do that because that's covered by a consent decree. So that's a big chunk of state money right there that can't be cut. And then another 25% of the budget is education. And that's a very, you know, I don't think there's a single lawmaker in the state who wants to really cut education very much. And then you have other costs for healthcare, pension obligations you got to cover annually. So it leaves you very little room to actually make like substantial cuts. And if you made across the board cuts in areas where you can do that, you know, without restrictions of the courts and state law, then you're looking at massive cuts to programs that would significantly hurt the state. And, you know, lawmakers don't want to do that either.
And there's a lot of groups out there, Ben, that are also pushing for additional funding or changing the way the state funds certain items like higher education, for example. There's a major push out there to do something similar with higher ed the way they are doing with elementary and secondary education. There's, you know, public employee unions out there talking about changing the Tier 2 pension formula, which pretty much, you know, saves the state some money compared to the older Tier 1 system. Are those things, I mean, those are still out there. People are pushing pretty hard for these, but are they just going to be out of luck most likely?
Yeah, that's it's hard to read right now, you know, still 6 months away from the budget being passed. I think specifically on higher education, there's a big desire to get that done because there are some state universities that are really struggling under the current, you know, independent funding system where each university essentially comes to the state house, presents their budget request, and, you know, lawmakers see what they can do about it. Essentially, there's not really a consistent mathematical way for state lawmakers to increase higher ed funding right now. So I think there's a huge desire to get that done, but that's definitely going to cause the state to pony up more money for that. And then in K-12, you see some of the same things where there's various groups out there, the Chicago Teachers Union being the loudest, that wants far more funding to go to these evidence-based funding formula programs that the state has to increase K-12 funding. The state can't really afford to do that at the moment either. And then just on top of that, there's plenty other spending pressures out there from, you know, tier two reform, which could cause, you know, more spending on pensions each year. There's public transportation reform desires. State lawmakers have their plate full of spending requests, but they can't meet all of them.
Yeah, Charlie, what do you think could happen with some of these ideas?
Well, I think some of the ideas that have been put out there, for example, the president of the Chicago Teachers Union, Stacey Davis Gates, suggested last spring that Chicago schools are entitled to $1 billion more. And technically, she's correct. Under the evidence-based funding formula, Chicago schools should get $1 billion more. But percentage-wise, there are several hundred school districts in Illinois that are getting a lower percentage of their needs met through this formula than the city is. And it would cost billions of dollars to go ahead and bring everybody up to, I think the mandated level is like 90% of need. So that's not going to happen. Another factor that is going to be involved here, and this is something that was mentioned in a memo that was sent out by Andy Menar, who is Pritzker's deputy governor for budget and economy, and he sent it out last week, talking about, and he sent it to agency heads, talking about guidance for preparing the budget. And one of the things he noted, as the Gombe report said, modest agency budget growth in the 2 to 4% range yields a general fund's budget shortfall of more than $3 billion. And one of the things he added, and I'm quoting from his memo, additionally, the incoming changes at the national level in the executive and legislative branch are creating some additional uncertainty regarding federal funding. And I'm thinking to myself, that's really a gentle way to put it. The guy that President-elect Trump has chosen to be his border czar, a guy named Tom Homan, in the Sunday news shows, he threatened that funding to states that don't go along with Trump's deportation plans would be cut. He says, quote, "That's going to happen. I guarantee you the president-elect will do this." And of course, Governor Pritzker famously said shortly after the election that if the feds are coming after Illinois' people, they have to come through him first. So I can see areas where suddenly the kind of money that's gone traditionally for different programs, highway construction, for example, I can see the feds under this plan, this of retribution, saying, no, you're not going to get any money. You know, your governor talks how he's going to protect all these rapists and murderers and killers and crooks who all the third world countries are dumping into our nation. So we're not going to do anything to help you guys. Nuts to you. So I can see that happening. And that's something that the legislature is going to have to take into account as they try and put together a budget.
Ben, are you hearing from anybody, Democrats especially, who may be concerned about the new administration coming in and at the federal government? Because I'm thinking, you know, yeah, certain programs could lose funding. Donald Trump's talking about tariffs, and a lot of people say that could, you know, cause inflation to rise again, problems for some farmers with that. All of that could impact Illinois. So the governor has to sit down and put a budget together by, you know, early in the year, but he may not know exactly what the Trump administration has in store. So really a tough challenge ahead here for him, isn't it?
Yeah, I think the biggest concern that Democrats have is that Trump is unpredictable. We have seen him as president before. We know kind of how he works, and you know, we know he changes his mind a lot. We know that, you know, he gets upset with his political enemies, and Illinois Democrats and J.B. Pritzker are certainly, you know, higher up on that list. And I think that's where they're concerned, is they don't really know what Trump is actually going to do. You know, he says a lot of things on the campaign trail. It doesn't necessarily mean he's going to follow through with that when he takes office, just like any other politician. But, you know, Trump has always exhibited this very unpredictable nature when it comes to what he says he's going to do versus what he actually does. And I think that's where Democrats are a little bit concerned. They've been a little bit cautious when you talk to them about it, and Governor Pritzker has even said this, is that they're being cautiously optimistic that they hope, you know, Trump will take office and there won't be major changes within federal agencies where the money that comes to Illinois really comes from. And that would be where the largest impact on the state budget would be. But I think there are certainly real concerns, and they're probably trying to plan some way, somehow behind the scenes about how they would address, you know, various funding sources that could get cut off if the Trump administration decides that's what they want to do, whether it's to punish Illinois or that's just because that's their, you know, their own policies on governing and what they think is best.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Capital News Illinois' Ben Zielinski. And before we leave the budget, Charlie, a question I get from people a lot, and I got a couple just recently again, listeners of the show often want to know, how much of this fiscal turnaround for the Pritzker administration has been because of taking sound financial action, and how much is due to the federal aid that's been pouring into the state over the last few years? So I thought I'd give you a chance to explain that.
It's not an either or question. It's kind of a merger in the sense that what Illinois did with the additional federal aid that came in was to kind of righten the fiscal mess that was left in the wake of the Rauner administration. Pritzker used the vast majority of the federal pandemic bailout money to pay off old bills. And I think we had a, you know, I don't want to cite a number, but it was really high of our unpaid bills. It was like $17 billion or something like that. He used the federal money to pay off old bills, prepaid debt savings, and by retiring bonds earlier, he saved the interest payments going forward, put more money into the state's rainy day fund, pay ahead on some of the pension obligations, get our unemployment insurance fund solvent. So the federal money was used to deal with some of these longstanding fiscal problems that Illinois has. And I think one of the difficulties going forward, and Ralph Martiri, who is the head of a think tank, the Center for Tax and Budget Accountability, had an op-ed recently that pointed out Illinois taxes consumer spending less than any other state that has a general sales tax. And one of the things he points out is that consumer spending is the largest segment of the economy, and it usually doesn't decline substantially during major economic downturn. Because if you think about it, people still have to buy groceries. They still have to do all the other things, buy gas for their vehicle, that kind of stuff. And he says, in his analysis, he says, Illinois sales tax applies primarily to the sale of goods, not services. And about 74% of Illinois economy and around 68% of all consumer spending involves services, not goods. And this is an issue that Ralph has raised for decades. And his recent op-ed, he said, simply expanding the state's sales tax base to include the same consumer services already taxed in our neighboring states of Iowa and Wisconsin would generate more than $2 billion in annual revenue. And so I think that's something to think about. And one of the other comments was, yeah, and if you started to tax services, you could maybe reduce the overall sales tax rate and still bring in more money. Obviously, lawmakers aren't excited about raising any taxes.
Sure. Well, we'll continue to watch this. Certainly going to be an interesting year ahead. Let's take a few moments here to mention a couple other stories. Ben, you reported on this involving what's known as BIPA for short, the Biometric Data Privacy Act. Lawsuit was filed against that. Tell us again, remind us what this act does and why are some people upset with it?
Yeah, I think a lot of people probably know BIPA as some of these class action lawsuit settlement checks that they've received in the mail over the last few years. If you're a Facebook user or maybe and any sort of site or company that you've interacted with that used your data in some way that violated Illinois' Biometric Privacy Information Act. Essentially, what this law does is it regulates how state or how businesses in Illinois should be using biometric information. It basically requires notification to whoever is having their data obtained that this is how the company is obtaining it, this is how they're going to use it, this is what they do with it. Several companies have violated this for various reasons, but they've resulted in enormous class action lawsuits. And state lawmakers sought to rein this in earlier this year by changing or clarifying the law that essentially damages occur just one time per person, not every single time, say, you know, your fingerprint is scanned, you know, when you sign into a time clock at work. It happens just once, not, you know, twice a day, every time you sign in and out. Under this ruling here by the federal judge this week, the judge threw out a case because it did not meet the damage threshold for federal court. And why that's important is because the single plaintiff in this case, he was seeking damages for having his data illegally obtained by his employer through a fingerprint scan. And he argued that, you know, he should be subject to more than $75,000 in damages, which is the threshold for federal court. And the judge found that it probably does not exceed $75,000 worth of penalties that the business would have to pay for violating this act. And he tossed the case out. And this is important because it kind of shows how the amendments state lawmakers made earlier this year are going to potentially be able to rein in the size of these lawsuits. And so businesses aren't subject to potentially billions of dollars of damages. They're subject to much smaller damages that may just be, you know, a couple dollars, you know, per person for a class action violation. And it's a win for the business community, even though they opposed the law that they were seeking. They really did want to see these damages come down. And I think they're pretty happy to see a judge at least initially rule in their favor.
And Charlie, let's stay with the courts. There's been a lawsuit filed regarding the state's abortion laws. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, last week, a coalition of anti-abortion groups filed a lawsuit challenging the new state law that mandates health insurers in Illinois to cover abortion care. And they argue that they are being forced to indirectly pay for abortions with their premiums. And they say the law is unconstitutional because it provides no exceptions or accommodations for employers or individuals who object to abortion on religious or moral grounds. And Peter Breen, who is the executive vice president of the Thomas More Society, which was the group behind the lawsuit, said, and this is his quote, "For Christians and many other pro-life advocates, Illinois abortion coverage mandate is fundamentally opposed to the religious belief and runs roughshod over their constitutionally protected conscience rights." Now, in response, a spokesman for the governor's office said the lawsuit was extreme. It takes away reproductive care for women. And Attorney General Kwame Raoul said that he will remain committed to protecting access to coverage for reproductive health care, including abortion, because the cost should not stand in the way of patients receiving critical health care.
Just a couple of minutes left here. Ben, a story you reported on, something I thought was actually likely to get some more attention during the fall session, but it got stalled out there, and we'll see where it goes now. And this has to do with the carbon capture, which a lot of people now are familiar with, in which gases are trapped and then pushed way underground. There is concern how this impacts a major drinking water source here in central Illinois, the Mahomet Aquifer. What's going on with all this?
Yeah, this bill would basically ban these carbon storage tactics on top of any aquifer, or I guess through an aquifer to be more correct. The bill stalled out, however, I think because there's a lot of confusion just among state lawmakers about if existing law and any federal protections and permits that are in place for anybody that is doing carbon storage injections into the ground, if these protections already exist. And lawmakers, Senate President Don Harmon specifically said he thinks it's better to take some time to kind of learn more about this issue, evaluate what is currently in the law, because Illinois does have a two-year moratorium until summer of 2026. So there won't be any new drilling projects done that could endanger the water source in that time. So I think lawmakers just want to learn a little bit more about this because it is a very technical project. It's very scientifically dense because it is kind of new technology, also technology that is unique to the state of Illinois. So I think I was a little surprised myself that it didn't move forward, you know, despite having an hour-long hearing during the veto session. But we could see some movement in the spring, if not potentially the year after.
And wasn't there just some problems with Archer Daniels Midland doing something similar, and people got a little more concerned about this?
Yes, this stems from ADM Indicator. They have been doing this for quite a few years now. They're essentially the only federally recognized business that actually can do these carbon storage and injection wells in the nation. But their injection wells have had some leaks, two that were identified within the past year, and they were both brought to the attention of the public and state lawmakers after Illinois passed legislation to establish new regulations for the technology back in May. So I think there's a lot of fear now that, you know, these injections leaks have been found. They're near the Mahomet Aquifer, but they're not on it. So there's no threat to drinking water, but there's a fear that new injection sites are going to be put on top of the aquifer. And if there's a leak, that could jeopardize drinking water for nearly 1 million people in central Illinois.
Well, let's go now to our notes from the field. And Charlie, we'll go to you first this week.
All righty. Well, the Attorney General has come down hard on Illinois school districts that ask police to ticket students who misbehave. Kwame Arul has said that the practice, which is still being used across the state, is illegal and it should stop. Now, this came as a result of an investigation sparked by ProPublica's reporting. The Attorney General's office investigative ticketing in one of the largest high school districts in Illinois, Township High School District 211 in Palatine. And administrators there, the Attorney General said, directed police to find students for school-based conduct. And the Attorney General said that this practice had an unjustified disparate impact on Black and Latino students. The ruling could have a very limited impact, but lawmakers are interested in actually passing a bill either in the veto session or next spring that would ban this practice. And so a student who is tardy or a student who mouths off in class isn't going to get a $500 ticket from the cops.
And Ben.
Yeah, on Monday, December 2nd, the State Board of Elections, rather, will be certifying the election results from back in November. What we'll really be watching for is essentially turnout numbers and kind of, you know, being able to fully grasp exactly how President Trump and Vice President Harris performed here in Illinois. New numbers from the Chicago Board of Elections this week found that it was the second worst election turnout in the city of Chicago in 80 years. The only election that was worse was in 1996 when Bill Clinton was elected to his second term. The Chicago Board of Elections reported that turnout was at 67% of registered voters. So this was below 70%, which is where some recent presidential elections have been. Even some state governors' races have been over 70% recent years. So there's going to be a lot of conclusions that will be drawn from lower turnout here in Illinois this year as far as how that impacted Harris's performance and Trump being able to close the gap here in Illinois, as well as just kind of voters' attitudes towards their candidates this year.
That's all the time we've got for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Ben Zielinski with Capital News Illinois. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.